Welcome back to Prime Your Midlife. There's so many studies that confirm that relationships are one of the most important facets of a long-term healthy life. And yet 46% or more of relationships, particularly marriage relationships, end in divorce. Here's a great conversation with Simon Worth, executive well-being coach, on how to have good resilience in relationships to create good futures together. Enjoy the show. Gentlemen, this one is for you. It's Prime Your Midlife. It is Men's Health Awareness Month. And this one is all about relationships. And unfortunately, relationship breakup. In midlife, the statistics say that 44% of divorce happens when we're in the midlife bracket. Why is that? We're going to explore that today. We're going to talk about why it happens and, most importantly, how we can prevent it and not become one of the 44%. And to help me do that, I've got Simon Worth here with me today, who is a well-being coach and a particular master on relationship success. Simon, how are you today?
Hi, Chris. Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. Really appreciate it. And yeah, great to be here and hopefully help in some way, shape or form.
So help us understand, where are you on the kind of the midlife part of life? Would you say you're in it, out of it, or nowhere near?
Fully in it, slap bang in the middle of it. I've just turned 50 this year. And so I would absolutely say, yes, I'm right in the middle of my midlife. And so can well understand and have been through a lot of these challenges, you know. So I was separated and divorced at 40. My early 40s, and so I can well understand, you know, the challenges that sort of face us in that sort of part of our life, in our midlife.
And would you say society stigmatizes us with the word crisis for midlife, or is that something that you believe to be true, in that midlife is a crisis point?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two sides to that. So I think there's the aspect from society in general there, where we're constantly being told that, you know, that association between the words midlife and crisis. We almost expect to go into our 40s and 50s with some kind of problem, some kind of drama, some kind of challenge. And I think, you know, partly there's some of the reasons for that perhaps may be, you know, sort of following on from your statistics, is perhaps our midlife is typically at a point where, whether it's influenced by society or ourselves, we kind of take stock of where we are. You know, again, a lot of pressure from society saying, okay, you're 40 odd, you're in your 50s, you should have your mortgage paid off, you should have money in the bank, you should have your retirement all taken care of, money for the kids to go to university, kids to get married, all that kind of thing. And so there's a pressure to kind of live up to that expectation. But equally, for those of us that perhaps aren't in that situation, where perhaps we haven't got our mortgage paid off, we haven't got our pension sorted out, we don't have money in the bank to pay for weddings or kids to go off to university, that can sort of contribute to us feeling like a bit of a failure. You know, we're not happy with life, something's gone wrong. And then I think things, if you're not careful, can kind of snowball from there.
Well, lots to unpick there. And I want to give servitude to anybody listening and watching. We are going to talk about, as we progress, ways that we can try to stave off this breakup, because I'm not here to advocate any aspect of thinking the breakup is the solution. So Simon is going to help us, and we're both going to talk about some of those things together. But I know you've just alluded to the fact that it is a midlife thing. But why do you think that more of it happens when we are in this midlife point, whereby more people are ending their relationships, particularly marital relationships? The percentages are the highest, although actually the numbers of people ending relationships of marriage is lower. But I think that's due to the fact that there are different genres of relationship, and also less people might be getting married. But just back to the question there, Simon, why do you think that at this midlife point, there is a higher percentage of marriage end than in other periods of our life?
I think part of it is down to, you know, like when we pass our driving test, you know, when we first pass, we do everything correctly. check the mirrors, you know, leave gaps and, you know, drive at the speed limit, all those kind of things. And over the years, we get into bad habits. And for me, I think that's the case with relationships as well, that perhaps you don't get off to a good start talking about a lot of the things in life when you're young, because you're young. You don't necessarily think about tomorrow. You don't necessarily think about 20 years, 30 years, you know, 40 years down the line. And so I think it's very easy in a relationship to get into this sort of habit of not communicating, of not talking, you know, of not speaking up for yourself, you know, of, oh, I just want a quiet life, I'll stay quiet. You know, I won't mention that, or I won't kick up a big fuss. The danger of that is then you can create resentment. You can be resentful of somebody else's behavior, or resentful of the fact that you feel you've avoided certain situations, certain arguments. But in reality, you haven't really sat down and spoken about them for the other person to be sort of aware of that. I don't mean through raging arguments, screaming and shouting at each other, because I think in those situations, very rarely do we actually listen to what the other one's saying. It's just about scoring points. It's just about getting our own opinion across. So I think a lot of it comes about by just not getting into good habits of communication. You know, I think it, at the end of the day, whether it's success in a relationship, in a business, in your career, anything in life really comes down to communication. So, I think that's probably the biggest sort of factor, I think.
And interesting, from a male perspective, I think that we, or I'm interested to see what your view is on the whole ego and the inner voice, whereby we might suppress that desire to be transparent in our communication, or we feel as though we should challenge something because it's now affected our own internal compass. And then we don't. And then the ego says, nah, yeah, you see, Simon, she's got one over on you again. And then that kind of creates its own pattern of destruction in itself, in your own voice. Would you say that is something you're feeling or hearing with other people that you're working with?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very easy to get into a sort of mindset in a relationship of winning and losing. I need to feel like I'm winning, you know, and it can over time then develop into a kind of almost like a them and us kind of mentality. And so I think for me, it's trying to change that mindset away from it's me getting one over on her, or it's her getting one over on me, to how can we both win? You know, what's a win for both of us here? And I mean, as you know yourself, most things in life are a compromise. You know, very little was sort of black and white. Most of it's pretty grey. And generally speaking, you have to compromise somewhere down the line. So again, it comes back to that communication. Look, this is really important to me. How can that need be met? But also understand that you have needs around this as well. How can those needs be met? But also bringing that kind of aspect of team to it, that we're in a relationship. So we're a team now, you know. Obviously, we're still individuals within that team. But how, as a team, can we approach these challenges that we're going to have in life? You know, whether it's financial, you know, problems with children, problems in the relationship. How do we approach that as a team, you know, so that we feel like we're winning as a team?
Mm. And in terms of intergenerational aspects of that team, I'm thinking of my grandfather, and maybe you're thinking of the same. And I don't know whether or not the modern man has caught up to the way that they operate now, in that the female has leveled up, and in society they have a lot, completely correctly so, a higher status, a higher economic ability, an easier ability to work. But are we as individual men, perhaps in midlife, looking back to our grandfathers, and we haven't quite caught up yet to this is the way he operated, and I'm trying to live in his shoes, but actually these shoes are no fit purpose for the way that I should be operating my life?
Yeah, do you know, I think that's a really good way of putting it, actually, because I think we are kind of in that no man's land between the previous generation, where society had determined how relationships worked to a degree. You know, the man went out to work and came home and the dinner was on the table, all that kind of thing. And right, as you say, quite rightly so, now that's more equal, and as it should be. And I think we're at that generation where we're still not quite sure where we fit in. You know, I think the younger generation, you know, my sons are both sort of 20, 21 now, and they're much more comfortable with how the world is now. And I think for some of us at our age, we're still struggling to, where do we fit in? I feel like I should be providing. I feel like I should be behaving a certain way. I should be taking these stresses away. But actually, that might not be what the person that's with us wants, you know. And so again, it comes back to communication. And if I'm in a relationship with you and I sit here and say, look, I'm feeling under pressure at the moment because I feel like I need to earn enough money so that you don't have to work, or, you know, and then you can come back and say, yeah, I love working. It helps me be who I am. You know, it gives me confidence. I love it, having that purpose each day. So without that communication, it's very hard to kind of shift from the assumptions that we make, you know. And I guess that goes alongside with communication, is making assumptions that you're thinking this, I'm thinking that, you want this or I want that. And actually, without sitting down and talking and having a conversation, that's not going to happen. So I think it's understandable, absolutely, that you know, middle-aged men perhaps feel in that sort of no man's land between how we've been brought up, what we've seen from our parents, versus how the world is now. You know, and sometimes that can take a bit of time to adjust.
Well, the word you used a lot there was should, and I think it's the worst word ever, because what we should be doing is not what we could be doing. And but we seem to hold a lot of faith in that word should, because of societal pressure or intergenerational pressure, or even the pressure of our peers, of people that we know. And, you know, you're down the pub and they say, Simon, you're not really going to take that, are you? Are you going to really allow her to talk to you like that? Oh yeah, I'll give it to her when I get back, and I'll tell her what I really think. Yeah, go on, mate. And it's still that sort of bravado that exists in the male sparring world of what we should be doing as men. Sorry, I just put my quotes up there for anybody listening.
Yeah, and completely agree. You know, when I work sort of one-on-one with clients, one of the words that we highlight as an illegal word is should. You know, I should do this, or I must be doing that. You can choose to do one thing, you can choose to do another. But as you say, the word should really isn't very helpful. And yeah, I agree. You know, sometimes you can be sat down the pub with your mates, and typically, you know, our friend that's goading us on, oh, don't take that, mate, you know, Cheru's boss, is probably, or possibly, the one that's very much a shrinking violet within his own four walls, you know. And it's just his way of getting, you know, his frustrations off his chest. But I think, you know, again, it's easy to be swayed by all these things, and whether it's peer pressure, whether it's societal pressure. But I think really it comes down to, you know, kind of taking that step back. What do I want? You know, what do I want from my relationship? And, you know, what do we want from our relationship together? But it's not about what my mate says at the pub. It's not about what society says. What do I want? What do I want my life to look like? And I think that can be a more sort of empowering thing, or way to look at life, to think, well, what do I want my relationship to look like, rather than how can I fix all these problems? So I think trying to find a way of just continuously looking forward. Okay, we are where we are. We're here. How can we get to here, where we want to be? And so I think that's sort of key thing for me, is just keep looking forward, but really sort of doing that inner work on yourself, really just say, what do I want for the rest, for the next phase of my life, you know?
Yeah. I've forgotten who it was that was talking to me about it, but he painted me the analogy of never ever talk to about anybody about a relationship apart from somebody that has relationship credentials. Because if you had problems with your brakes in your car, you wouldn't ask your mate to say, oh, what's wrong with my brakes? Oh, I'll tweak it here and I'll move it there and I think I'll fix it for you. But we're happy to take the recommendation of our mates about how we can fix our relationship, and yet they have zero relationship credentials to talk about how we should fix something that part of our the way that we breathe, the way that we live, and the way we coexist.
Yeah, and I think part of that is perhaps because, whether it's conscious or subconscious, I think we're looking for validation. You know, well, I'm going to go and talk to my mate, you know, John, because I know he'll back me up, and he'll know, I know he'll think I'm in the right, you know. So part of it perhaps sometimes is we don't want the honest answer. We just want the answer that we want to hear, you know.
Exactly. And
that's okay. Sometimes it's okay just to have a bit of a vent and get things off your chest and say things that you probably don't mean, but you know, you just get them out there and then you kind of reflect on it and you think, actually I don't think that. I don't believe that. That's not the case. I was just getting frustrated, or I just felt I wasn't being listened to, or my needs weren't being met, you know. So I think part of that is down to that kind of seeking out validation to, I'm justified to feel the way I do, you know.
Well, going back to the communication aspect, I did some research, and apparently the Journal of Sex and Marital Therapy said that 44% of breakups were as a result of reported communication problems. So going back to the habits that you talked about at the start, of the things that we create into our relationships because either we don't know or we haven't come to terms with how we should communicate, what would be some of your tips to create effective communication?
Yeah, I think it's giving time for communication. So don't just assume it's going to happen of its own accord. You're making a conscious effort to sit down of an evening, over the weekends, you know, perhaps when you're not under pressure, but just to talk about, you know, how are things for you? You know, how are you doing? You know, how are things in our life at the moment? Are there any things we need to address? Is there anything that would be helpful to talk about? You know, how's work going? Just creating that almost that habit of sitting down and having a conversation. You know, is there
and when we ask that kind of question, assuming we ask it with the complete and utter feeling of whatever happens as a result of this question, I'm happy to take on the chin.
Yeah, I think it's and perhaps, you know, going back a step from what I've just said, is almost sort of sitting down together and agreeing, look, let's have a chat about what we think, you know, a good relationship is. And if we can agree on what a good relationship is, then can we also agree that, you know, whatever happens around that, there's no kind of hard feelings around that. There's no judgment. There's no sort of repercussions of that. Because if we don't feel able to open up and be honest, then actually we're not going to communicate and things aren't going to get resolved. So giving each other permission to say what's really on our mind, how we're really feeling and thinking, is really important. And sort of, yeah, creating that safe space to talk, to discuss, you know, we might not always like what we hear, but again, try not to take it personally, you know, okay, this is, you know, this is what my partner is saying they want. That doesn't mean it's a rejection of me or something about me. Okay, how can we try and make sure this need is met? You know, how can we work together to try and achieve this? You know, so yeah, I think that whole, you know, creating the right environment to communicate is important. So if every time I try and sit down and have a conversation with you, you burst into tears, or you storm out the room, or you start throwing things, and you know, perhaps that's not a very sort of conducive environment to communicate in. So first and foremost, what would be useful? How can we sit down and talk without, you know, taking offense at each other, without getting upset with each other? And then, you know, just getting some common goals. You know, where are the things that you're aligned on? You know, what are the things that we both want to do as a couple? What are the things that we want for ourselves, our future, for our kids? You know, and start finding all those places of agreement rather than disagreement first. And then, you know, and the other important thing is, I think there's a very good book called The Languages of Love, which I think from memory talks about five different ways that people can show that they love each other. So part of, you know, that all falls into communication. So if me feeling loved means somebody constantly reassuring me, maybe physical contact, physical touch, maybe for somebody else it's buying gifts, it's doing some chores for them or something like that, you know, we all interpret love in a different way. And so I think helping each other to understand what we need from a relationship, what we need to feel loved and supported, is you know, can also be really helpful.
Well, regrettably, lots of relationships will come to an end. Your perspective, Simon, do you think that every relationship is worth saving?
No, I think there are times where absolutely you know, two people or even one person decides that's not right for them. And I think it's, yeah, I absolutely wouldn't say that every relationship should be saved. There's some relationships that just aren't healthy for either party. But I think once that decision has been made, whether it's by one person saying to another, our relationship is over, or whether it's by both of you agreeing at the same time, we both feel like our relationship's over. It's trying to do it, you know, in the best possible way. So what's the outcome I want from this? So if it's me saying to my wife, this isn't right for me anymore, perhaps we've been through counselling, perhaps we've been through, you know, different efforts, different attempts to kind of save the marriage and it hasn't worked out. It doesn't mean that you have to be at war with each other. You know, there's obviously lots of emotions that come up about that. But I think, you know, once that decision has been made, I think, OK, well, let's look at myself as an individual. What are my values? You know, who do I want to be as a person? And, you know, quite often there'd be situations where you have children. So it's about, yeah, OK, well, who am I as a person? What kind of a parent do I want to be? So in every interaction going through this breakup, whether you're trying to save the marriage or whether you've accepted it, it's over. It's okay. Well, in every interaction, how can I make sure I'm behaving in line with my values? I'm being that person that I want to be. And I'm setting the example for my kids that I want to set, rather than sort of falling into that trap of all of a sudden it's conflict. It's her against me. It's scoring points. I think that's a key thing for me is trying to get clear. You know, once you've decided one course of an action or another, what's the outcome that you actually want from this? And I think most of us would say, if sadly we are going through a divorce, relationship breakup, we want this to be as painless as possible for each other, for the kids. You know, and so what can we do to try and make sure that happens? And that's difficult. That's difficult, particularly where one person perhaps wanted the relationship to continue. There can be a lot of sort of anger, upset, sort of bitterness, and that can be hard to manage.
I love that aspect of, you know, what kind of person am I going to be? What values have I got that I'm going to bring to this? When that situation does break up and one party decides that they're going to, you know, leave, and equally when there are children involved and they are then walking away from the family home, that creates a huge amount of mixed emotions, loneliness, shame, guilt. And we are talking about Men's Health Awareness Month, and those feelings for both ladies and men can be very destructive. How can you offer some assistance to somebody that might just be in that place now? They have decided that this is it. I'm going to walk away. And I'm now sitting in my flat on my own. And I've got nobody but myself to talk to. Mm. What kind of reassurance or help can you give that person, or that person that's still in that place, that they're just feeling lonely, shameful, and guilty?
Yeah, and I think the first thing to say is that however things might seem and however bad things might feel, things can always get better. You know, and I say that as somebody that went through a divorce, got to a point that was very, very low, did have, you know, thoughts about whether I wanted to carry on in life or not. And as you know, we've talked before about rationalizing that as a decision. You know, it can get very dark. It can get very lonely, and we can turn on ourselves, beat ourselves up, feel guilty, as you say. But I think, you know, as I say, the first thing to mention is that it is that reassurance that things can get better. Things can always get better. And there's various ways you can help that to happen. So looking after yourself, you know, it almost is the first thing that goes by the wayside, but making sure you're still getting out, even if it's just going for walks, getting fresh air, you know, getting out into the fresh air and the sunlight when we have some, that can be really helpful. You know, eating well, because again, that can be one of the first things that goes. You know, you start ordering takeaways, you start eating out of a tin can, you know. So look after yourself, because you can't be the dad that you want to be if you are not looking after yourself. You know, as the saying goes on the planes, you know, you put your mask on first before you help other people. So creating that situation where you're as strong as you possibly can be, yeah, accepting you're going to have good days and bad days. When you're having those bad days, who are the people that you can turn to for support? You know, whether that's friends, family, you know, are there different organizations, different charities, you know, might be working with a coach, you know, going to see a counselor, but trying to understand what's my support system. So when I'm struggling, what are the things that I can do to help, you know, be proactive in boosting my mental and physical health? But also, you know, who can I go and talk to if I just need to get out, if I just need to offload, talk things through, you know? So I think that's, you know, that's really important. But, and again, coming back to what's the outcome I want from this? And rather than focusing on, I think there are times in life where we can live in a time machine. You know, we can just look at the past. Oh, this went wrong. That went wrong. Why did this happen? Why did I do this? Why did I do that? And that can create sort of depressive thoughts. And then you look to the future and you think, now what's going to happen? I'm divorced. I'm separating. What's going to happen for my future? Where am I going to live? When am I going to see my kids? And that can start creating some anxiety. So important to if where you can, just try and bring back to the present moment. And, okay, we're starting where I am. You know, how do I want my life to look like going forward? You know, how can I make sure I'm still a great dad for my kids? And again, goes back to that kind of values piece as well. You know, who do I want to be? You know, what sort of person do I want to be? And, you know, what does my best self look like? What does my worst self look like? And it's almost getting up in the morning. You clean your teeth and you look yourself in the mirror and you say, okay, well, who am I going to be today? You know, am I going to be Spider-Man or am I going to be the Green Goblin? You know, I'm not fully up on my superheroes and villains, so I might have got those Marvel comics mixed up, but it's making those conscious choices. You know, who do I want to be? And as I say, looking forward, you know, trying to create the life that you do want to live rather than trying to fix the old life. And those things I think can be helpful.
Well, the thing is also is that it's a huge amount of change and it all comes in one movement that you literally walk away and you've just detached yourself from every routine that you've got. The way you get up, the way that you have your breakfast, the way that you interact, the children, the human beings that you're with. And it's natural that no part of the human body and the brain likes change. And it's just about honoring the place that you're in, which is hugely, it's just massive amount of change and just holding yourself to account on that, that this is something that just needs to be taken at a step at a time. And going back to previous times of change, well, I got through that, and I just need to apply the same amount of mindset to this change.
Yeah, and I think something you mentioned there was routine, and I think that's something that can be really helpful is, as you say, we move away from our old routine that we might have had for 5 years, 10 years, or even 20 years or longer. It's important to try and create a new routine, you know, and to minimize those kind of sort of spaces where you've got nothing to do, no one to talk to, you know. So creating a routine, yeah, absolutely is helpful. And yeah, I think it's giving yourself that permission, you know, that this is a massive change. You know, it really is a massive change, and that's okay. So it's okay to feel sad, it's okay to feel upset, it's okay to miss your kids. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. You know, if you were the one that instigated things, in terms of, you know, understanding that the relationship wasn't going to go any further, that doesn't make you a bad person. You know, that doesn't mean there's something, you've done something wrong. And ultimately,
well, I'd just love to jump in on that bad person and the demonization that you might be feeling as a result of whatever action you might have taken, or perhaps, you know, you're in the position where somebody is instigated against you and you're now feeling the frustration of why me and how dare he or she. What are your advice points for not jumping into that sparring aspect of two people who have now exited a relationship and now start allowing the ego enter into the room, where it's not just two people, but it's almost four people fighting against each other, and the two people are fighting amongst themselves with their own ego and their own self.
Yeah, I think for me it was really trying to not see it as a battle, trying not to see my ex-wife as the enemy. And obviously some days that's easier than others, but it was things like, I mean, understanding, you know, I don't have to react to what somebody says to me. So if I get a message from my ex, you know, saying one thing or another, calling me names, accusing me, you know, of ruining everyone's life and things like that. Firstly, that doesn't mean it's true. That's just one person's opinion. But you don't have to react to those things. So I think keeping power over your own reactions, your own actions is really important. Don't give somebody else the power to control what you say and what you do, because ultimately we're still responsible for what we say and do. There's no justification. You know, well, she said this and she said that, so then I called her that. That doesn't matter. Is going back to your values, is that being the person that you want to be? You know, if your kids read that text message or overheard that conversation, how would they feel? You know, so I think as far as you can, I'm going to focus on what I can control and influence rather than things that I can't. So I can control what I say, I can control what I do, and I can control when I react. You know, I don't need to react in that instant. I don't need to reply to that text within 30 seconds. I don't need to reply because somebody said something to a mutual friend, or, you know, people know you. You know, they trust in who you are. You know, you don't need to defend yourself at every opportunity. But it does, you know, and it can feel like, you know, you do need to do that. So, yeah.
Well, again, I don't know who it was, but somebody said in the heat of the moment, never reply, because your angered self isn't the one that you would like to live in 48 hours. And you talk about that holding space or waiting 30 seconds. Just take a pause for thought and assess your values, which is what you said is, is the person that I'd like to be. And I love that. If your pet, your children saw that message or heard that voice, would they be okay with that?
Absolutely. And that's a really powerful guiding light, you know, for me, but also accepting that sometimes you'll get it wrong. Sometimes you will react. Sometimes the kids might hear you say something or read something. And actually it's trying to see that then as an opportunity. Okay, well, I can sit down with my kids and say, look, do you know what? I'm going to hold my hands up here. I didn't behave in a way that I'm proud of. And I'm sorry that you saw that. I'm sorry that you because then what you're teaching them is how to behave, how to react. You know, when they're in a situation at some point in their life, they'll think back to that. You know, they'll see the example that you've set. So it's okay to make mistakes, you know, but it's also good to kind of put your hands up and acknowledge that. And then that's setting a good example for your kids, you know. So, none of these things are easy. And I think we just, you know, it's part of it is accepting this is a really difficult situation that really isn't easy. And people, you know, it's easy to make mistakes. But again, come back to your values. Who am I? What's important to me? You know, what's the outcome I want from this? And if I send this text, if I, you know, make this comment, if I start screaming and shouting, is that helping me work towards a point where I'm able to spend time with my kids, set a good example, be the person I want to be, and create a safe, secure environment, you know, for them to come and stay with me, you know, and sort of co-parent. So there's a quite a well-known thing in sport and business, which you've probably heard of, which is the, will it make the boat go faster? And I think that's actually really useful. You know, if I take this action, if I make this choice, is it going to make the boat go faster? Is it going to help me get to the outcome that I want, you know, as a parent? And I think it's almost putting that, almost don't have the luxury of being an individual in that and just screaming and shouting and kicking and screaming. It's, you know, I'm a dad here. I want to set a good example. These are my values. This is the person I'm going to try and be in every situation. And this is the kind of dad that I want to be. And I think if we keep bringing it back to that, that can be really helpful. And I think just to sort of, I guess, follow up from that, if somebody tries to get a reaction from us, by something that they say or do or a text message they send, and we do react to that, what we're saying to them is, I'm giving you what you want. So what that encourages them to do is to carry on behaving in that way. So if we can kind of take control of our reactions and not react in that situation, what we're saying is, okay, there's no point me sending that text. There's no point me being spiteful or manipulative, for example, because that doesn't create a reaction, you know? And so I think it's just always being conscious of on what it is you're trying to do, what's the outcome you want, what's the effect of this behavior or this choice, this action. So yeah, hopefully that's helpful.
No, I like it a lot. And it's that the reason you left was because of exactly this situation. And in order for you to find the new Simon or the new Sophie or whoever you might be, you need to change yourself. And changing yourself is the way that you react.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, as the saying goes, your life won't change unless you do. You know, so, and that's difficult because if you've been doing things a certain way for 5, 10, 20, 25 years, it's hard to change. But I think the first sort of step to changing is awareness, you know, being aware of those thoughts, being aware of your actions and being aware of the person that you want to be. So much in life we just do from repetition, bad habit, and sort of breaking that cycle to okay, who do I want to be going forward? You know, what's the outcome that I want from this? And I think that can really help as I said before, you know, that sort of guiding light really.
Well, there's that ego and sort of the, you know, the chimp paradox. There is in all of us the chimp that sits on our shoulder that wants to win the fight. And the reaction comes in, it goes to the central processor and says, how does Simon normally react? Fight. And then the chimp goes, yeah, go on, Simon, fight. And of course, before you know it, you're in a fight. And the two gorillas are in the ring having a right old silver-backed gorilla fight. But the end outcome is not going to be any good for anybody.
No,
and mates, when you're going into that situation again, you've left, and you're saying he's done this, she's done this. Are your mates the right people to be telling you what to do next?
Well, yeah, and that very much depends on your mates, because you know, some of them can just say what they think you want to hear, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's but I think, you know, going back to what you're saying there about the kind of chimp paradox, I think it's okay to have any of these thoughts. It's okay to think, oh, I just want to say this and I want to do that. And, you know, I want to take a baseball bat to the car. It's okay to think that. It's just, if you do that, then that generally isn't very helpful and it can come with consequences. So it's understanding, it's okay to have that thought, but actually, is that going to be helpful? You know, what's actually going to be the most helpful course of action from here? So, and as you say, I think sometimes it can really help to talk to somebody that isn't emotionally invested in the same way that you are. You know, if I go and talk to somebody, whether it's a coach, a counselor, then they're not invested in the same way that I am. So they can take that step back, see things slightly more objectively, ask you questions, guide you, try and keep you back on track of okay, what are you trying to get out of this? You know, what's the outcome you want from this divorce, this relationship breakup? You know, would you rather have a scenario where you're at loggerheads, you're fighting, you're screaming and shouting? Would you rather be calm and relaxed? That obviously takes two to tango, and you know, you can't control what the other person says and does. But I think, yeah, just trying to take that conscious sort of choice of how you behave, I think is, yeah, really important.
Question here for you, it might take you a while to answer this one. With all the advent of AI and the statistics rising of breakup, as a well-being coach, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future of relationships?
I'm very optimistic. I think part of that is it comes down to that word communication again. So it's people perhaps that work in these sorts of scenarios, these sorts of situations. How can we communicate to people, you know, before this becomes a problem? You know, try and get these habits in place, try and get the communication thing is a key one. You know, we can encourage people to communicate from when they're teenagers, you know, in their 20s, in their 30s, and carry that on throughout a relationship and throughout their life. That's something that's going to help them enormously. And I you know, and that helps you whether we're talking about a relationship with your partner, with your boss at work, you know, with your friends, with your kids, trying to understand each other, question each other rather than tell, all those sorts of things. And so I know I'd say I'm very optimistic, because I think it's about communication. It's about communicating. It's about communication. And for that, what can I do to help that? I can do more than I'm doing. I could do more social media posts on it. I could do some videos on it, podcasts. So, and hopefully today goes some way to help with that. But now I'd say I feel very optimistic.
Very good. Well, that's a relief.
Well, it's easy, isn't it, to get into this doom and gloom. If you spend too much time watching the news, reading social media, you can think that the world's about to end and everything's a disaster and what's the point in any of it? And that's just not reality. It's not reality. And bad news sells papers and gets views on websites and all that kind of thing. But no, I think it's important to be optimistic. Yeah.
Well, we're coming up to that season when Love Actually will hit the screens. And I just say to anybody, if you want to see if relationships should be optimistic, just go to the arrival centre of Heathrow International and look at the people that hug who haven't seen each other for a while. And then you know that there is love in the all around us. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's brilliant. Really good.
Is there anything that you would have liked to have talked about so far, Simon, that I've not allowed you to be passionate about?
No, I don't think so. I think, my passions really are about helping people. And that is a mix of, unlocking potential, whether that's potential in their career, their relationship, but ultimately just in their life so they can live happy, fulfilling lives. And I think, it's always about, okay, well, what can I do to take responsibility for this, as an individual? So, yeah, I'm really passionate about helping anybody to make changes in their life, because sometimes it's really hard to see the way forward. We don't know what that first step is or what that next step is. And we can be so focused perhaps on the outcome that we don't see what the processes are to take us there. So I think I'm very grateful for the opportunity to hopefully get my passion across for helping people create a next chapter and or to manage very difficult situations.
Well, I'm going to ask you in a minute to talk about your sort of three fundamentals, but before we do that, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Could you help tell us a nice story about transformation from somebody that was literally in the relationship abyss? It was toxic. It was combative. And now it's a land of positivity and harmony, even if yourself, if you want to talk about that.
Well, yes, absolutely. I was going to say, no, they've all ended in disaster. It's all been a complete nightmare. But but no, I mean, there's lots of examples of that, because I think so many of these issues come down to communication and making assumptions. I've decided what my other half's thinking because they're acting in this way, or I'm interpreting their behavior in this way. And I think it never ceases to kind of amaze me, to be honest, and inspire me, that when people do start communicating and sitting down, acknowledging each other and their feelings, and explaining, what they think, what they feel. I mean, part of that is listening, and there's a saying goes, you've got, two ears and one mouth for a reason. And I think listening to somebody to try and understand them rather than waiting for your opportunity to speak is important. And so, I mean, there's no end of examples I could give you, in all honesty, where the person in front of me has actually been saying, my marriage is over, relationship's over, we're going to get divorced. And you sit down, you talk things through, what is it you actually want? And you start questioning, you start challenging thoughts and feelings, and you start encouraging new behaviours. Well, how about if you sat down tonight and talked about this or talked about that? How about if you ask how somebody would like to be communicated with, how they would like to be, how they would interpret that you love them, that you're still important to them? Because we, I think so many things in life, we make so many assumptions, and it's easy to get into bad habits. So I think, as I say, I'm very optimistic. As I say, I could, any number of examples where things turn around because people start talking. Equally, in situations where marriages or relationships haven't been salvageable, the ability for people to still maintain a good relationship is really powerful, and particularly when kids are involved. So, you know, if you and I are in a relationship together, we have kids, we can absolutely agree that we want our kids to be protected, we want our kids to be loved. We can absolutely acknowledge and agree that we both love our kids and we want the best for them. So what's the best way to move forward with that? And, you know, I think, again, I just think it all comes down to communication. Just talking, have a clear sense of what you want to achieve, what the outcome is you want, the person that you want to be. And, you know, whatever the outcome, whatever the results in terms of your relationship, you'll be happier as a result. And I think your kids will be happier. You know, you have a better relationship if you can with your other half. Again, it's not always just down to one person, but yeah. So yeah, very optimistic. Keep the faith, keep believing, but just yeah, keep talking.
And I would be very mindful of communicating how you're going to communicate, because if your normal pattern is non-questioning, non-inquisitive, and you suddenly start coming up with all these questions that Simon just talked about, you might be greeted with, "Are you all right?
Yeah, who are you?
Are you having an affair? Or what's going on?" You know, because suddenly you're changed, and that change is automatically met with a certain amount of curiosity or even reticence.
Yes, it's kind of setting the scene. You know, do you know what? I've been having a few thoughts and feelings lately where I haven't been feeling too happy about life, and I've just kind of been thinking about where that is, and I just thought maybe it would be good to just have a chat about where we both kind of are and where we see things, you know, and it would help me to understand how you feel and what you want sort of going forward. And it would help me if I can sort of talk about how I'm feeling and you know, the sort of thoughts and feelings I'm having, you know. But yes, like you say, if your normal way of communicating is just to grunt and make a cup of tea without saying much and popping it down with a biscuit, then yeah, going into full blown, you know, hostage negotiation style conversations might be a bit much to stomach. Yeah.
Some really sage advice there, Simon. And thank you for opening up with some of your own journeys and hurdles and caves that you've had to run into. What would be your three takeaways that you'd like to leave the listener with or the watcher with in terms of Simon's experience of life 50 years in? These are my three thoughts that I think would be my non-negotiables for leading a long and healthy relationship for the future.
Yeah, I think one of the key things is that relationship with yourself, creating you as the foundation for success in every aspect of your life. And I think really understanding who you are, what's important to you, what you want from life is really important. You know, that can help avoid drifting and all that kind of thing. I think second to that, none of these are in a particular order, but I also think prioritizing your well-being, you know, physical and mental health. So don't wait for there to be a problem. And, you know, in the same way as if I want to perform at my best as an athlete, what are all the things that I'm going to do? Well, I need to exercise. I need to eat well. I need to talk to somebody perhaps about the things that are stressing me out. I need to understand what are the things that I can do that help me relieve stress, you know, whether that's playing football on a Wednesday night, whether that's going playing rugby on a Sunday, you know, running marathons like some nutcases do, I could mention. Going to judo, you know, whatever it may be. But I think finding some outlet for your stress, for the pressure, really the whole point of that is around just prioritizing your well-being, because you can't be, you know, your best self, a great dad, a great partner, a great boss at work, a great employee, a great friend, if you're not looking after yourself. You know, it's very hard to do. So get yourself in a good position, and then you're in a place where you can help, you know, other people. And the other thing I've got really down is about being conscious, you know, putting thought into where your thoughts are, you know, not living in the past, not living in the future, but, you know, being in that presence. So just being conscious about your thoughts, what you're giving time to, you know, where you want your life to go. So I think that really is, you know, hopefully those three things are helpful for people.
Very much. And the bit that I'm kind of thinking of that is that you were yourself before this relationship ever happened. And when you get triggered by the fact that you've compromised yourself, the person that allowed to happen is you, not the person that you're with. And if you get animosity about the fact that you're no longer the person you were, well, whose fault really is that? Mm. Is it the fault of you, or is it the fault of the person you're now with? Because she or he probably didn't mandate that if you're going to be married to me, this is how I expect you, because she came or he came to love you because of the person that you were when you were yourself.
Yeah. One of the things there, I think, is trying to move away from words like fault and blame. You know, where can I take responsibility? You know, so am I responsible for contributing to the situation that I'm in now, where I don't feel like I'm the person that I want to be, or living the life I want to live, or feel like I've had to change? So I think first and foremost is, what have I done to sort of contribute to that? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I really enjoyed the conversation today. It's such an important fundamental of my five, and all the studies in the world talk about healthy relationships are the key to longevity and also a healthy long life, because without good relationships, we're not really the humans that we were designed to be. Absolutely. So thank you very much.
No, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
You can find Simon Worth Talking. You'll find him on LinkedIn. And I'll share all the show notes in here. And I'm sure that by the sounds of things, he's going to be social media posting and podcasting a lot more in the future.
Absolutely.
Nice to see you, Simon. Thank you so much for your help.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, thank you for tuning in today. And I guess the first thing is to ask you, what will you do as a result of that conversation? One way you could help me today is to share the conversation, subscribe, or just rate the show. We'll be back soon to talk about more fundamentals in midlife. Whatever today, one life, love life, living life.